Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly. This is Alan Bishop, head alchemist at Spirits of French Lick. Our brand new bottled and bond Old Clifty Hoosier Apple Brandy is made from fresh pressed Michigan apple juice fermented for 2 weeks and double pot distilled. We mature this brandy in full size number 2 charred barrels to give a deep and rich color and flavor. Named after the historic distillery just north of Camelsburg, Indiana, Old Clifty Hoosier Apple Brandy captures the hearts of modern bourbon drinkers. Always remember, drink responsibly and never drink and drive.
Biggest bourbon boom that ever has been. It's just remarkable. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great. You know, it's like you talk about that you haven't reached the ceiling. Heck, you look up and you guys, I mean, the bourbon industry collectively, you can't even see the ceiling.
No, and everybody's looking for it because everybody's putting a lot of money into this.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's very important to know if it's slowing down, you know, how we want to spend, how we want to expand, and nobody's seeing any end in sight. Every year, it's just there's that much more excitement.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just awesome. So, I mean, that part's exciting, and then kind of how you keep coming out with your limited editions, the single barrels, and then your staple, and then I just think all the different, you have so many different, talk about the different
recipes.
Okay, yeah, that's
For the yeast, right?
Yeah, so really, if you look at our products, we have four standard products, four of those, small batch, select, and single barrel. And if you taste any of those, now there are differences in age, proof, but they're all very different. And there's a reason for that. It's because different bourbons go in each of those. Now, by different bourbons, they all come from here. They're all straight bourbon whiskey, but we have 10 different recipes. So we start out with two different mash bills, both very high in rye. One's 35%, one's 20%. Rest of course is corn, 5% malted barley. So we have two mash bills, and then we have five different yeast strains that we use. Each strain, through fermentation, of course, it creates alcohol, it creates heat, carbon dioxide, but also creates a lot of other congeners. And these are those other acids, aldehydes, all those other higher alcohols, fusel oils, all these other compounds at very small percentages, but they're very important because they can be fruity, floral, all these different characteristics. And we've isolated through the years these five strains, K, Q, O, F, and V, and each one of those is different. It comes across with different aromas, different flavors, and that's all via fermentation. So two mash bills, five yeast strains, that's how we get 10 different recipes. And we bring them together in different combinations to create the different products. And, of course, we'll taste through some of these. And I actually have a private selection, which is something that it's not like a small batch or a small batch select, because it's not the kind of thing you just pick up on any shelf anywhere. But it's a great program because it really sort of lets people experience our individual recipes. This one is a single barrel, but it can be any of the 10 recipes.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So we can taste that at any time, too. If you guys want to go ahead and start sampling.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about
it. Let's get right into that.
So I actually selected an OBSO for us. And this program started in 2007, 2008. And actually, this one right here.
Oh, did I grab the wrong one?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm going to go for private selection. You guys are the guests. I'll pour it for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this...
Got it.
So we started this program back then for retailers. So what we do, it's a single barrel, but we allow the customer to come in. We roll out, hopefully, we don't always have all 10 recipes available, but as many as we have, we'll roll out a barrel from each recipe that's in the program at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they can just sort of pick their favorite. So it's great. Because they're so different. Some people will go for the high rye with spicy. So sort of picture that being on one end of the spectrum. Then maybe the other end is the low rye mash bill with the oat yeast, which is a little sweeter, a little fruitier versus the high rye with the spicy yeast strain. This one right here is the high rye mash bill with the oat strain. The oat strain is the one that creates really rich, almost like stone fruit flavors and aromas. And let's see what the proof tier on this one. It's a second tier. It's 56.5% P Warehouse North Side. So it's been a while since I've tasted this.
It's like a little bit of caramel, but then there's like a cherry. It's like a cherry. Like you said, that stone.
Yeah, it's just rich stone fruit to me.
Yeah,
it's like
yep. And then just a little bit of caramel in there. It's a little bit lighter, right? In your, it's not real dark. It's almost a golden amber, right?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
Shit.
I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it.
No. Take that shit serious.
And what's the age of that one?
That's
the second
year
put on
the BS. That's what the age was.
10 years, 1 month old.
Wow.
So you're going to see extra age in this program, too. These are 8 to 12 years.
Okay.
So, and...
There's a cherry in like a... Maybe an apricot or citrus there, too. And it really comes through with the cherry on the palate. I mean, that's really...
I think it balances out with... Vanilla, you get a lot more, just at least I did on the palate than I did on the
memory. Just a little bit of white pepper, very light on the spices.
And that's the other thing. This is the high rye Nashville, so you're going to get that rye coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the fruit comes out.
That's why, it's unusual that I'm getting like a white pepper, like a light spot, you know, peppery spice than a heavier.
It's a 10-year, right?
10-year, one.
And, for a 10-year, so for me, with the rye, like I like the rye spice on a bourbon.
Yeah.
But if it starts to get too oaky, I don't like that rye oaky mix. Like it'll just turn into like a bitter kind of wood taste, like that tannin that comes off there. But if you balance it like this, and you've got that, you know, that rye. And then there's a little bit of that oak at 10 year, you know, that's hard to not have it in there, but it's not bitter at all.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
Yeah.
Finishes off real sweet.
With vanilla. It does.
Yeah.
And it is a challenge, especially when you get up in these extra age barrels, 10, 12, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the barrels that aren't starting to get astringent or bitter, or in some cases just overly oaked and flat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of the exception to find the good barrels. They're still vibrant, rich, have depth. So it's not an accident. Every OBSO batch of 10 years isn't going to taste like this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Most of them are going to peak out, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9. I'd say 10 years, they're not going to be over the hill. They're not going to be too astringent at that point, but some of them are going to start to show signs of it. So we really, you know, do our due diligence to find the barrels that seem to be still increasing in quality and not starting to peak and start to go over the hill to where they start to get too oaky.
Can I ask you, how big is your tasting team?
And we're actually in the tasting lab here, this is the sensory lab, so all the batch selections, test blends, single barrel approvals, single barrel selections, those all take place in here.
Okay.
And there are primarily two of us that are like full-time looking at. It's almost a daily task in here, looking at these things. Our actual sensory panel that's looking at all the different stages of production, can you tell you it's 10, 12 of us? It's with both locations.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone on the sensory panel is trained, and everyone has a very good palate, and we all understand each other's palates.
Yeah.
And a lot of times...
That's key to be able to understand each other's palates.
Oh, it is,
yeah.
I think first is terminology, to have common descriptors.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all see the same stuff, you know, to some degree. I mean, some people are more sensitive.
But if conveyed incorrectly, then you've...
It's useless, yeah. So we all have to know the language. And so we have a very good panel here. But, you know, the day-to-day stuff, we'll invite the rest of the panel in, you know, very often for... You know, different kinds of evaluations. But the day-to-day, like barrel selections, test blends, it's typically me and Chris, the guy that you met when you came in.
Yeah.
It all happens right here.
Nice.
Well, and because you've got the different yeast strains and then the mash bills, how it's going in, that makes it although it's something that you've stayed consistent with, but it's kind of complicated, especially when you're maturing, isn't it? I mean, the maturation with all the different, like at some point, you know what you're tasting based off what barrel you're tasting, but to keep it straight, isn't it kind of a, is it rough because you're starting to taste these, then you go to those, and do those profiles come out? You know, where you specifically now know that what that is from what barrel you're tasting?
I'd say I've been doing this 17 years, so I have an internal standard to some degree.
Yeah.
But I don't rely on that. Like, if I'm going from, like, some OESK evaluations to OBSO, and it's, say, for example, it's our three-year inventory survey, so it's the first time we look at barrels since they were put in the barrel to kind of gauge where they're going to go. So if I'm looking at, you know, any given recipe, I will have standards or samples that I selected the year before or 2 years before that really hit that mark. So it sort of gives me sort of a calibration to know what these samples should smell and taste like at 3 years of age, so I can gauge off that. Because it's a 4-point scale, you know, 4 indicates that it conforms to the standard, it can be used for whatever. Mm-hmm. And actually, the majority of them, fortunately, are typically 4s. So there's a lot of note taking, but that's the point where things would be allocated to small batch or single barrel. Mm-hmm. They won't necessarily end up being there because that's 3 years.
Yeah.
Small batch is 6-7 year old stuff, single barrel 7. So they'll be reevaluated again and again before they're actually dumped. Mm-hmm. But it is difficult. I mean, to deal with 10 recipes, not only just in evaluating, but inventory management.
Yeah.
And we've got all these products. We've got 10 recipes. All these products are different ages. These 10 recipes, some of them are shared between products, some standalone. So trying to, and they all evaporate. So back calculating all that evaporation, knowing where some of these will potentially go, it's pretty complicated. We pay for 10 recipes.
Just thinking about it.
So yeah, 17 years, it's still, you have to be on your toes, I imagine, because.
Oh, for sure.
Or, you know, where it's coming from and to get it, you know, I mean, you're distilling so much and then there's all, you know, to be able to call for it and get it, that system has to be down too. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple times you've gotten into a barrel and you whatever, and you're like, nope, that's not really what that says it or whatever, you know, because nobody's perfect, right? I mean, it's not a perfect system, but that's where you come in, right? Just to be able to make sure everything gets into the right places.
Yeah. And I would say about this, you know, industry, you know, us and other distilleries, we're all doing things the same way we've done forever. Just we have a lot better control over it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. You still need a nose and a palate, mm-hmm. and you know, across the board here and bottling every step of the way to double check everything, whether it's approving to be used or selecting something to be used, or when everything is dumped and it's going to bottling to make sure it's approved to go into the bottle. And yeah. It's everything from, you know, the distill that comes off the still to help us, you know, troubleshoot and monitor all the processes out there to just checking, you know, a particular barrel whose batch has already been approved for single barrel to make sure that it's of the right quality to go into a single barrel bottle. So, and everything in between. There's so many opportunities to bring in the human nose and palate for everything.
That's awesome.
Awesome. One thing, talking about this expression, what we perceive, those two gentlemen there have a much more refined palate than I do, but I'll say this. One thing I like is that I think the nose should match the taste, and you get that cherry fruit, you know, on the nose, and you get it on the tip of your tongue, side palate, and finish all the way back. It's so uniform and so good. There's no bitterness whatsoever. It's just
that private select right there is very, very good.
Thank you. Like, I just kind of randomly picked out. I'm glad I did. I think OBSO is a good example of sort of on the outskirts of what we do. You know, I think the V's and the K's are more like the center mass of the typical four rows profile. Like the O's, Q's, and F's. You know, historically we've used those in smaller percentages because it doesn't take a lot to go a long way. That has such pronounced character. Yeah. And I love demonstrating uniqueness with something like an O or a Q or an F.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
You pretty much nailed it there.
So what do you got next for us?
Let me ask you one other thing, though.
Yes.
About how much is your production here now?
So we just expanded. We're just completing the expansion in 2019. So seems like yesterday, but I guess it's going on a couple of years now.
Yeah.
So we were at 4 million original proof gallons per year. That was our max capacity, running almost 10 months a year.
Yeah.
Because we shut down. We have to shut down at least 2 months a year.
Yeah.
So we doubled that. So the max capacity out here is 8 million gallons. We're not up to that yet. We're kind of stepping into it because we know that when we expanded, we weren't going to double our sales.
Not in one day.
6 years down the road. Yeah. So we're stepping into it. We'll be fully at 8 million probably the year after next.
Yeah, but I bet you it's going quicker than what you thought.
We're
crazy.
We're filling that capacity very quickly.
We just found out something yesterday from another distiller that right now one of the new problems that's sort of facing the distilleries now is barrels. Are y'all having that problem?
Fortunately, we are not.
Okay.
But yeah, I know it's a big issue for a lot of distilleries right now, especially some of the micro distilleries just starting up that didn't have contracts or long running relationships or long term planning.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to get creative. I mean, you guys are pulling, the big guys here in Kentucky, they pull from where they pull. And of course, the cooperages are going to basically be still making sure you're getting what you need before they're not going to like short you guys. And then a small distillery.
Contractual obligations. So.
Yeah, you guys fulfill it and they make sure they fill it.
The thing we were talking about yesterday too is the and what you were talking about earlier is just the incredible growth in this industry with existing distilleries greatly expanding their capacity and all the new distilleries, but yet you haven't seen that kind of growth. At least I don't think you have with cooperages. So sooner or later you're probably hitting a saturation point on what the current production is able to deliver,
and that's probably part of what we're saying. I know that Independent State is wonderful to work with, and they've
Andrew's a great guy.
Yeah, his research over there is fantastic, and I know they've increased production, but is it balanced? I don't know. I'm happy that we're not in a bind, but I wish no one were.
When you go there, we toured it. I think in March. When did we? Well, we just toured it recently. Okay. And when we went for the tour, we got to see everything. But you saw the lumber aging outside. Uh-huh. So even as this goes through, they probably had 5 years of lumber outside aging. And then you're looking at it's kind of like if there's a shortage in wood there, it's what they're putting down to start aging now to make the barrels.
It's a complicated industry. I mean, just look at, starts with us. We have nowhere to sell 5 years from now. Didn't think about the wood. I mean, they can find oak trees, but it's managed very, very well. What's an oak tree take? 80, 100 years to grow?
Yeah.
So we think, 5 years forecasting, we complain that there's no crystal ball for that. Think about that. How do you plan that far ahead?
Well, they did that.
Yeah, they've done that. They've done a great job.
To
be sustainable.
The cool thing is why it's a new charred oak barrel is when after Prohibition and the gasoline car, they used to put the gasoline in oak barrels, and then plastic was discovered, and they could put it in plastic barrels, and they had this huge glut of oak barrels. So that made sense in 1964 to deem to be bourbon. It had to be in a brand new charred oak barrel because they had all these oak brand new barrels just sitting around that they hadn't had to use because gasoline went to plastic in the 50s. So it's kind of
amazing.
I love that part of the
history. Yeah, I know that. That's
interesting. So, all right. So what are we tasting next?
Let's go to Small Batch Select. How about that?
Yeah.
And wonderful.
Which one is that?
Can you dump that in the sink for me?
No, the other one.
This one. Yeah.
I was going to give myself a little bit. That was
your, not your throat. Some people think.
Thank you.
There we go.
So this Small Batch Select, this was released in 2019. You have to go back to 2006 for our release prior to this. It was our Small Batch. So we had four rows of bourbon on the market when we came back. Single Barrel was released in 2004. The standard 100 proof single barrel, which is always OBSV. Then we did Small Batch in 2006. So there's quite a gap there between Small Batch and Small Batch Select. Mm-hmm. So with this, really we were looking at the current market, current like consumer. And the current consumer was looking for something higher proof, something non-chill filtered. And, of course, we wanted to utilize our 10 recipes. And we've done it with small batch limited editions, sort of the same thing. It's an opportunity for us to bring those different recipes together, create something new in the limited edition case, something every year. Yeah. So that was the platform we wanted to use. So with this, it ended up being non-chill filter, 104 proof, and six different recipes. So it's both mash bills split down the middle. It's the V yeast strain, which is the one that's also in single barrel. It's kind of delicate fruit, apricot, sort of green apple. The K, which is the dried spice, sort of adds a counterbalance. And then the F, which to me really defines the character of this. Especially the F and the V when they come together in harmony.
I can smell that apple a little bit.
I smell caramel.
Yeah, caramel apple.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So much
vanilla. So that's really cool when you talk about a small batch, whereas other distilleries, when they're making their small batch, they don't get into the different yeast strains of different barrels. I mean, you're truly making a small batch. You're not taking one particular bourbon and mixing the same bourbons together. You're actually taking the different yeast strains and then in here, in this room, right, coming through and making it taste the profile. Now, are you trying to keep a consistent profile?
Yeah.
Or are you just trying to make it the consistent profile and a little better every year?
I think it's as good as, I want to think it was as good as it could be in 2019.
There you go.
So it's about consistency.
Okay.
And so this is six recipes, but to put this together, we probably have, at any given time, 20 different batches, thereabout, of these different recipes sitting in the warehouses aging. So when it comes time to bottle that, which we will bottle it several times a year, we'll pull samples from all those barrels and start doing test blends in here. So six recipes, but it might be the formula that's graded in here. You know, basically says when you're dumping this, go to these warehouses, pull these barrels. It could be 14 different batches. So even like the OBSV portion of it could be some of this batch, some of this batch. Those batches are always going to be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all a product of these test blends that we do in here. It's trial and error, an educated trial and error, to try to hit that same profile every time.
I have a question for you, and you might have spoke to this a little bit, but when you get like the perfect flavor profile for what we're doing, and I realize that, like you say, because of the five-year planning and the changes in material, the changes in barrels, a little hard. But do you analyze it in terms of not just the taste and aroma, but the pH or the specific gravity or anything like that to say, so if something's a little off, you can say, well, this is why. Does that come into play?
Not really. We do have, actually, you hear that hum in the other room. We have a GC mass spec in there.
Okay,
that is a great tool
for
kind of what you're saying. Like,
right, yeah.
If we tasted this and said, that's interesting. Is that compound X I'm tasting?
Right.
Is that isoenol acetate that's very strong this or anything? We can go in there, run a calibration curve to whatever compound we're looking for, and say, well, yeah, it's in there at 50 parts per million. Or we can tell you exactly what it is. But it's not really useful because there are hundreds of compounds in there that all come together to create that total flavor profile that we're tasting. We taste it, and it takes a human palate to really see how everything works together, and for lack of a simpler term, to know if it's good. So
yeah.
We have this great technology, but it's never going to replace the human palate.
Right. Well, it gets you where you need to in the number. Like you're then that's when you start to adjust. You know that you have to chemically get it to a certain composition, correct? It's got to be close, and you have the numbers of what that is. But as you know, you've done the numbers and probably had them match up exactly. And then when you taste one or the other, they're the exact same composition, but they don't taste the same, correct?
Well, we've never really used it to that. The most I've actually analyzed a sample and actually quantified the different components would be to create an export certificate.
Okay.
And that's looking at a few of the higher alcohols, ethyl acetate, furfural. And so some of the big flavor compounds, but they're only a snapshot of all the different esters and all these other compounds that are present there that are contributing to the final flavor. So I don't have a reference that says this is all the analytical data that should taste and smell like this, and the sample go along with it. It's incomplete. And
right.
But to do that, that alone would be a huge undertaking. Just have one snapshot, say this is what it tastes like. And then I guess in theory, if you had another sample and you analyzed it, you could say if all those compounds came out to be the exact, which would be damn hard to do,
right?
Impossible. Then you could say, that's going to taste and smell like this. Some confidence.
But you could also use that if there is something, if you get surprised by something that I really don't like that, you would be able to identify maybe what
was that can happen. Yeah. Something like PCA, like cork tank, which is a rare, but it exists, that complaint where you get taint from heavens and wine happens occasionally in bourbon. There are certain markers where you say, do I smell it? Do I not? But that's where something like a GC mass spec is very useful.
Right. Okay.
I would say analytics are more, the tail end is kind of research and kind of interesting or confirm what the palate says or what the palate sees. Like the palate definitely tastes.
It starts with, right? All with
it
the
starts
palate.
Here. Yeah. But I'll tell you, on the front end with fermentation and distillation, monitoring, analytical monitoring on that end is super important because I'm not out there tasting the mash. No one's tasting the mash and saying, this is the composition of sugars at 48 hours at the end of fermentation, or these are the acids, or that is all done by HPLC and high-performance liquid chromatography. So that's a quick snapshot of how the fermentation is going along. So that is probably more of what you're asking, that it's useful on that end where, we want to have a snapshot into what's going on, or some understanding on a chemical level, what's going on in that ferment or the yeast tub or, that stage of production. But when it comes to the final product again, it doesn't matter. The GC could tell me it's bad, but if I taste it and it's good, it's good. It doesn't matter.
But also, fermentation is very important. Everybody knows that the yeast production and of the alcohol is very important, and it matters because it's how much yield you're getting. I mean, if all of a sudden your yield is down, you got to figure out what's happening with the yeast and then you're always trying to maximize that, correct? So that the yeast makes the most alcohol out of that sugar.
To a degree, that's our primary objective out there is the quality of the distillate when it comes off. And typically, if the quality is good, then the yield's going to be good too.
Okay.
But we're not just trying to focus on the yield, and that's not the primary objective. I mean, the yield is what it is, and it's reported, and we know what it is. But unless it dropped off significantly, and if it dropped off significantly, it would be so much we're losing money there. There's something wrong that we're going to also smell and taste. It's going to be off of this distillate.
Okay.
So we notice the proof in the yield, but it's sort of secondary to the quality.
So I just want to do a little story. It's kind of initially when that was introduced in 2019, said, right? Uh-huh. And it was in Ohio. I picked up one of those and gave Mrs. Xavier that for her birthday.
Okay.
And that went on the shelf. And at the time, we were kind of just getting into it. And I was like, oh, that's a little bit more expensive. I'll get her a nicer bottle. But now, then as you go along, you understand what you're actually getting. And you really now make me understand what I'm getting. So that's really kind of
So I think I told you this story along that same time. You know, I work, you know, we all have day jobs and we all work some incredible hours. And, you know, little things like Valentine's Day and Sweetest Day kind of pretty much are there that morning before you even think about it or anything. Yeah. And so I think I told you that I wanted to go out and snag her a dozen roses, and at the local grocery store, the guy that goes around here, and the Corkers do it too, they, you know, they pretty much, you can get a really nice bouquet of roses for what you used to have to call in an order from a florist before. Uh-huh. Well, I went there, they didn't have, all the roses were gone, so I think I got her some small batch, four roses. I said, honey, I didn't get you a dozen roses, but I got you four. So, and she was quite Valentine's Day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this yes. one, I like, yeah, the caramel, you know, the little bit of apple. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't lie to you.
I'll tell you what I like about this, and the flavors, I can go into the descriptors there, but it's the palate, the mouthfeel, the finish. Yeah. It's just very so viscous, so rich.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, it fills the whole mouth. It's the size, good.
And once again, too, you don't get that any kind of bitterness on the side palate. It's so uniform. It's so good.
Also, what I found after doing a lot, and I'm sure you do too, the nose usually, when you pick up the most flavors, isn't when you just pour it in your glass. It's actually after you sip a couple sips and you let it sit there, and then when you revisit that, it seems like the nose is so much more prominent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was exactly true on the first expression we tested when you said cherry. I got some kind of fruit, but I didn't really get cherry. After I tasted it, came back and nosed it again, it was like, yeah, it's cherry.
Yeah. A little bit of breathing.
Yeah.
All right. So you got one more for us, and it's a very exciting one.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is our limited edition 2022. This little preview for you guys. This won't really hit the shelves until next week.
Yeah, and it wow. was what was it? It was lotteried off. That lottery went through. But as far as hitting the shelves in Ohio, are
yeah, okay. For now,
we're not.
So I'll fall on my face when I stand up.
Yeah, I don't know how much this is going to hit the shelves in Ohio. It's kind of like where we are. It's almost like you have a better shot of being where you're getting struck by lightning sometimes with some of this
yeah.
stuff. But, you know, that's one another thing. What we've always found is, or I find as looking for bourbons, and I do it a little bit, at least a couple times be in the right place at the right time if you just consistently stay at it.
Yeah. No. That or just have good friends who, a lot of good friends. Somebody's yeah. going to get like, everybody's going to get a lot. That's right. That's the case in point. Yeah.
That's how I got Monday podcast name Super Nose, is because I'm sort of like the bourbon hunter and how I came about.
Gotcha. He's like bourbon yeah. boss too. I mean,
that's like
he's great to be on his Christmas list.
Yeah, I came up Friday a day early before we checked in the house on Saturday.
Yeah, he's the tip of the spear.
Just to stop at all the different places, you know, my 6-hour drive up and a lot of different distilleries.
So initially when we first started doing this, we come down Thursday through Sunday and we got it. Well, last year he's like, we'll rent the house from Saturday to Sunday, because I'm coming down early. Well, then we worked it out to come down on Saturday too, so we're all coming down. But then that wasn't good enough for him. He had to come down on Friday, get a place, stay overnight, and then be there when we got there. So then this year we're trying to come down on Friday. He goes, well, then I'll come down on Thursday. I'm like, okay, pretty soon we're gonna be at so 2 weeks.
Drive. Yeah,
I love coming up to Bourbon Country and just meeting and getting out and talking with all the people.
He's always
that's the most fun.
I'm too busy. Oh, you guys want to give those thumbs up?
Oh, yeah.
You got stuff from the audience.
Yeah, and this is your baby right here, right?
Yeah, so this is really most fun I have every year. So it's a small batch platform, so it's a chance for us to show off what we can do with the different recipes. And for this, it's those special batches that seem to be aging very well. Either they're on profile, but not getting oak and just continuing to get better as they age. Or sometimes it's unique batches. It can be, the criteria is just, there's really no set criteria. It's just pulling these batches aside and holding on to them to be potential candidates for the limited editions. And typically about November, December each year, start pulling the samples, bring them to the lab here, and I'll spend typically a week or two just getting familiar with those batches. They're usually about 20, 25 batches of this older stuff, potential candidates for this. And then after, you know, as you're looking at them, you know, different ideas start to emerge. You think, how would this batch work? This batch, or what if, you know, could the oak with this one really be offset or balanced with the vibrant youth characteristics of this batch? You know, just ideas start to come. And then it's test blending. And for this one right here, I think this was 25, 28 test blends. And then once it was kind of finalized, I went back and tweaked it, you know, plus or minus 5% of each batch until it finally ended up, so I think it was 32 test blends maybe. But this one's a combination of a 20-year-old OBSV. I think that's, and that's, it's not insignificant. I think it's about 20%. I know it's 20% in here. Then there's a 15-year-old OESK, a 14-year-old OESV, and a 14-year-old OESF. So four different batches, age 14 to 20, non-chill filtered, 109 proof. So, see what you guys think. Cheers.
That's amazing.
Cheers. 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 Thank you.
It is amazing. Having all those eight, those years, it's not oaky at all to me.
You know, that's always the challenge. Just,
yes.
I want to bring up the
fifth. Slightly, but it's sweet, and it's not.
Yeah, I think it's just enough so you know it's got some old bourbon. It's
how did you do that? Okay, I'm noticing this, okay? So what I'm getting, I get the four rows, it's like there's a four rows black pepper, okay, right down here. Then I go over here, and I get a caramel. Then I come here, I get an apple. And I come up here, and I get a cherry.
Yeah.
Stone fruit. Yeah. It's like all of cherry, it in one.
Yeah.
Just that four, one is like, normally you can't get that separation, but it's there.
Yeah, it's
wow.
All those characteristics, all four of those batches come through. Some of them you sort of see independently, some of them come together and create, you know, some middle ground flavor that neither one really possess on its own. So it's magical. And sometimes you can predict what's going to happen, you start bringing these batches together. Sometimes, I'd say more often than not, I can start on the test blends and I have an idea in mind how it's going to taste once these come together. Usually it's a surprise, like it starts to lead in its own direction, sort of forges its own path, and then, you know, I kind of react to that with the different test blends, and all ones end up where it ends up.
This definitely has all the different fruit, but this one has, you definitely have gone from white pepper to black pepper, though not a kill your palate.
No, I can't hear that.
There's definitely,
that's the four roses.
Yeah.
That pepper is like standard for a rose.
Yeah.
But, like I said, it's got the apple, the caramel. I know, I picked up the cherry right there. I'm going to see if I picked up on the palate.
I'm getting more of a pear or apricot. I was about to say, I'm picking up a little apricot off of it.
Yeah.
I get that apricot berry-like fruit.
Yeah, okay. Even
some cocoa.
How'd you say that?
A lot of cinnamon.
Yeah.
I would say
cinnamon, good one. Yeah.
Cocoa. I think with a good bourbon, and you'll see this a lot, if you're looking for something, you'll find like a lot of bourbons are a lot of really good bourbons are complex.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, it's, of course, you always got your caramels, your vanillas to a certain degree. I think the challenge is getting those along with the oak, balancing those, and then making sure that some of those more vibrant, younger characteristics can shine through. Like with this one, that 14-year-old OESF, that one, it actually smelled and drank a lot younger than a 14-year-old. It was very vibrant. And that was kind of the starting point. Trying to take the youth and bright characteristics of that, balancing with the 20-year-old.
Yeah.
We still had, for 20, still was surprisingly nimble. And bringing those two together, and then in the center, I think that OESK and OE, or OES skin, OESV, really helped kind of build the whole body. But it really started with those two bookends, kind of that young, vibrant, that older, more elegant
version. There's no doubt. That is sipping. That covers, you know, it hits all the different sensories, and then it gives you that nice, there's enough proof there, there's a body there. I was so looking forward to meeting up with you again and doing this and hoping that, you know, because I've heard nothing but good off of that. And that's what, and you know, you've got the whole whiskey world, you know, just waiting for that kind of that release, especially after last year. I mean, what we tasted, you know, but I can tell you this, do you find, like, if you're in your day-to-day stuff and you're tasting, and I know it's your job, but if you're kind of like tasting with family or friends, the whiskey gets better. It always seems to me it's your situation too that will make you have a better analogy. Are there days where you're just kind of like, I need to punt? Like, you're just, the palate's not on, you're not tasting right, and you're just like, let's not make any decisions today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And some of those days I don't even have allergies at all. It's just those days. It's like, and there are days where it's like, man, I don't know. Am I too sensitive? And so that's the good thing about having, especially with like QC, having a panel or, you know, someone else was. I had that last week. We're approving a bunch of single barrel samples, and I was in here with Chris, the guy you met. I was like, I think I'm too sensitive today. I'm wanting to reject a lot more barrels than what we normally do. Normally, maybe it's a pretty stringent like single barrel proof. So it might be on average one barrel for tier or Rick and tier. So one out of every 22 barrels is about what, you know, kind of falls outside that range. And he's like, how does it? Am I just that sensitive today? And there are days where it's like, maybe today's not the day to make any big decisions. You know, I'm really, whether it's something you eat, the, you know, barometric pressure, I don't know. But I know my palate well enough to understand that it's not the same day to day.
Well, yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of things that can affect your palate.
Too,
so, you know, yeah. I mean, just even your whole inner body and attitude, you know, getting up, you wake up in a bad mood.
Yeah.
You know, your palate's not going to be that.
Wake up in a bad mood and every whiskey tastes good.
Yeah.
See, there you go. He's always looking for that. It's like, it's not, he's not doing it as a job, he's doing it as a necessity. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, having to do this now, and it keeps getting bigger. So, you know, my collection, I can't. It used to be I would look for the good ones and then I would drink them. Uh-huh. But it's with podcasting two times a week, doing events with other people, and going and doing this, you just kind of, the drinking aspect is left out, except for really good, you know, if you're on vacation or whatever. But from the day to day, you know, you've got to keep it completely in control. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's
okay. Yeah, you know, there was a time when drinking was a problem for me, but, you know, now that I'm an alcoholic, it's no problem.
Exactly. But, you know, you're putting your palate there, and you put it into the brand, and then people get to experience that. But you also know that this brand is going to be around a long time. So you're always in the process of somebody that you're training underneath, so that they know, because nobody can do it forever. I mean, we know that if history's taught us anything, there's a lot of different distillers that have gone through the process, and then how it gets passed on is very important. That would be the last thing I'd like you to talk about.
Okay. Well, kind of like when I was offered this job. This was, you know, Jim Rutledge. If you know bourbon, you know Jim Rutledge.
Yeah.
He'd been doing this for 49 years when he decided to retire in 2015. And, you know, we didn't really, and we don't really now, have like a standard succession planner. It's not like there's a training or a certain protocol or regimen that anyone's going through to be master distiller. And I didn't go through that. it was, I guess it's probably because we're still a growing company. We're moving so quickly that, like in my case, and even now, it's like everyone has their roles. They're becoming more and more defined, but there's still a lot of, you know, teamwork around here. It's pitching in, helping out, and learning different aspects of the facility. And that's kind of how I got to where I am. Like when Jim retired, I didn't know it was going to be a master distiller. First, I didn't think he was going to retire because he loves it so much.
Yeah.
So when they called me and they said, Jim's retiring, you're master distiller, I mean, I was shocked. Maybe more shocked that he's retiring. But, you know, Bowen was like, that's fantastic. But, like, I hadn't been, you know, specifically trained for that. So, you know, there are other people around here that had a lot of experience that could do the job also. So, you know, I was probably more intricately involved with blending and barrel selections because I was strictly quality control. So I had, you know, a lot of experience from, you know, grains that come in to what goes out the door in a bottle. So sort of all across the board, you know, experienced and been doing it for at that point 10 years. So now, and I can think of, you know, a lot of people here that would be great. And hopefully it doesn't happen. You know, hopefully I'm around for a long time.
On that path.
They're on that path that, you know, have the passion, the knowledge, and, you know, I think that's what it takes. The willingness and, you know, the love of the brand, you know, wanting to be like you said, you know, this brand's been around since 1888.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long time.
Yeah.
I've been here 17 years in this role for 7, and, you know, after me, there's going to be someone after that.
Yeah.
So I'm just a little piece in this long, and even if you look at, you know, what's going on today, I'm just a little piece in everything that goes on here, sort of, you know, out and talking about it, because, you know, that's part of my role as master distiller. So apart from my responsibilities, you know, here at work, the fact is, I mean, there are so many people involved in every step of the process. Guys have been at the distillery for, you know, dozens of years. People that are in the warehouse have worked there forever. You know, if that weren't the case, I wouldn't be able to go out and tour and, you know,
and talk about what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. But I promise you, I can leave and everything's going to be working out okay out there. You know, there's so many talented people here, so much knowledge.
Well, I think you like, for instance, it's an art still by putting out these private selects in the limited edition, because yes, the distilling part has to go down, but it really does come because I've found that the palate is very important, and that's what everybody has to know. There has to be the larger distilleries like yourself is up until like the 70s. All that ever mattered to some of the master distillers was trying to keep consistent. It was such a difficult thing to do. And people weren't that much into change. Whereas like right now, people love different, you know, the selection is what's really hot right now.
Absolutely.
And they accept the change. And I've even seen a change in how everything's been aging. Like Kentucky has been experiencing some fantastic weather probably over the last 10 years, just straight, where there's not a year off where you're not aging. And so even the lower end whiskeys still seem to be getting better, because if you're aging, even the barrels that are going to the regular whiskey, you know, the everyday whiskey, those seem to be picking up caramels and stuff that's been happening. So, you know, that's one thing, but you're in control of that. And in the end, as master distiller, this span, what comes out, that's what people, that's your responsibility, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably where you know, my more immediate and visible impact is, like, barrel selections or blending for limited edition, that sort of thing. Absolutely. And that's where I always think I'm fortunate that my palate is not too far out in left field. Like, when I look at something and taste something, like, if I'm confident that I like it, I'm fairly confident that most people are going to like it.
Yeah.
Because in most cases, a lot of these are just standard. Like small batch, that flavor profile, I didn't develop that. But I know what it's supposed to taste like, and I know how to get there. Know which barrels to select.
Right.
Something like small batch select, when we developed that, you know, I didn't have any standard to go by. So you know what I did? I blended up something that I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like my guideline, my center is going to be, I'm going to make the bourbon that, to my palate, the one I like most. That's exactly what I did.
Well, that's what that's why they made you the master distiller. I mean, that's, you know, the definition is, like you said, it's, they trust you, they trust your palate, and then you, like you said, you've evolved into the rest of it, but, you know, it's just a symphony. You can't just go solo, and that's the same, you know, there's, the solos are great, but as a symphony, that's what this is.
Oh, yeah. It's a big team, a lot of experience and talent.
And the happier those people are there working with you, the better the product's going to be, and that's anywhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. All right, I think this is phenomenal. Cheers to that.
Cheers again. Thanks, guys, for coming out. Thanks
for having us. I can't wait to
see you guys out on the lawn. Yeah,
for sure. On Bourbon in the Air.
Yes.
So another great podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Remember, www.scotchybourbonboys. You can find everything Scotchy Bourbon Boys there. T-shirts, Glencairns, that type of stuff. Remember, we are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. And then check us out on all the major podcast formats. It's been great this time. So thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll have a little see if I can get you along. We'll just
take this out.
All right, hold on.
That's one catchy tune there, by the way.
Yeah, that's Kenny Fuller.
There we go.
Kenny Fuller, the brand ambassador for Luca Mariano. Okay. And he said, hey, you guys need a theme song. And he knocked that out for us, so here, use it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, show me a way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. For if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you we must die. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
All right. That was fantastic.
That was good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the arts.